Good morning. It's 8:38 Finger Lakes Morning News. It's time to get healthy with Finger Lakes Health, and Laura Turbide is off today, and that means Kimberly Locke was here. Good morning.
Morning, Ted.
I saw you run by our water station at the Cubby Chase.
Yeah.
Now, I understand, was that a record number or close to a record number of people? I think that's what I heard.
Yeah, it was a pretty large group. We had over 500 participants from the walk to the 5K to the 10K. And we really want to thank you guys at Rotary for helping out do the water station and for all the volunteers at the event. We wouldn't be able to do it without you guys.
Well, and one of the things I've said about this event, every single person who comes by says thank you, even the ones who don't take water. Oh, thank you. Thank you for doing this. And it's just a well-behaved group, and they're very appreciative, and you know, for the Jim Dooley Center, a great event. So I'm glad to hear that it went well again.
Well, thank you.
Now, you were saying just before we went on, there was a Reader's Choice Award recently in the Finger Lakes Times.
Yes, I just want to thank everyone for voting for our urgent care as the best urgent care in the Finger Lakes. It was part of the Reader's Choice contest that the Finger Lakes Times put on.
All right. Well, terrific. Our guest has been with us several times before. Give him a big introduction.
Yes, today we have Dr. James Mark. He's a board-certified orthopedic surgeon with Inter Lakes Orthopedic Surgery. He's the medical director for the Finger Lakes Surgery Center, the director of orthopedics for Finger Lakes Health, and he's been doing sports medicine, specializing in that for over 23 years.
And that's what we're going to focus on is sports medicine. Dr. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Ted.
But before I do that, somehow this escaped me all the number of times I've talked to you. I was just reading through your bio. I didn't know that you did 10 years active duty in the Navy and then reserves after that as a flight surgeon. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I first started off after my surgical internship training through the Navy. I went into flight school as a flight surgeon. And you go through the initial part of flight training. I had the opportunity to fly the trainers, and then you move on to whatever your squadrons are going to be. And I was very lucky and was what I wanted to do. I ended up getting an air wing position. So I was with Carrier Air Wing 7 out of Naval Air Station Oceana in Virginia Beach. And for the next 2.5 to almost 3 years, I served as an active duty flight surgeon, which enabled me the opportunity to fly in almost every tactical jet that the Navy had and sometimes the visiting Air Force squadrons. And I actually have 55 landings on the Eisenhower aircraft carrier. And
wow.
I booked over 120-something F-14 Tomcat hours and I think about 90 A-6 Intruder hours. And like I said, various other aircraft I had the opportunity to fly in. So it was a great time. And then after that, I rolled directly from flight surgery into my orthopedic training at Portsmouth Naval Center in Portsmouth, Virginia, which is basically the Tidewater area right next to Virginia Beach. So. And then I finished as an orthopedist in the Navy, and I had 10 years under my belt at that point, but I did stay in the reserves, and I served for another 10 years and actually was called back in 2003 during one of the conflicts across the seas. I was called back to active duty for about a three-month period, and then I got to that 20 years, and I had done my time, and I retired. So I'm now actually a retired Navy commander.
So did you get to do like research into high G-forces and things like that and pilots?
Well, not only did I do research in it, I experienced it,
yeah.
I got to do it, and that's the whole thing. So, yeah, that's part of your training. I mean, you do spend some time at the Naval Aeronautics Space Center in Pensacola, Florida, so there's a lot of that part is part of your training. So the idea of a flight surgeon is you need to, if you're going to take care of people that do this, you kind of have to kind of do it to understand what your pilots are, what the lingo is and what they're talking to you. I, of course, did it because I thought it was cool and I had a lot of fun. And still to this day, a lot of my best friends are guys that I flew with in the Navy.
So what's it like coming down on a carrier and trying to catch that hook from a couple of miles out in a pitching sea?
Yeah, it's like nothing you can describe. They make a funny thing about, especially night landings. They say if you can strap a flashlight to your head, put a postage stamp in the middle of your living room floor, shut the lights off, and you can dive at the postage stamp and hit it with your nose, then you can be a naval aviator. So
wow.
It's kind of funny. Yeah.
Now, one of the big topics in sports right now is what they call one sport injuries. We're seeing more and more specialization among young kids. In my day, you played football, you played baseball, you played basketball. Increasingly, we're seeing kids thinking that they're going to be in the big time, either a Division I college athlete or a professional, so they specialize in one sport. What's the increased injury risk in doing that.
So the problem, the campaign now nationally for the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and the American Orthopedic Society of Sports Medicine is the what's called the one sport injury, and the kind of theme is that physicians can treat it, but parents and coaches can prevent it. And the problem is that, as you said, Ted, we're seeing that these children at very young ages, 5, 6, 7, they're being kind of channeled into the one sport. So, and I see this even locally in my office as a sports medicine specialist. You'll see someone who's coming in and they're playing, you know, basketball, and then they're on the AAU travel in the summer, and then the next thing, and the next thing, and it's just basketball, 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 basketball. And there's two kind of things. We kind of push our young athletes, even as you went back and mentioned that when you grew up and I grew up, you know, you played football in the spring, or excuse me, the fall, you played basketball in the winter, you played baseball or lacrosse in the spring. But then as kids, we were off in the summer, right? We ran around, we rode bikes, we played wiffle ball, we swam. You know, kids today, that's when AAU is big and that's whatever. So even the kids that are playing multiple sports, they're not resting their little bodies. That is a concern. But going back to the one sport thing, big, big topic, because these little growing bodies are not getting a chance to rest muscle groups in a certain way.
Well, and you mentioned AAU, and where I'm seeing that, it's spilling down into girl sports now. When I do my high school games, I get the rosters, and pretty much any starting varsity high school girls basketball player plays on an AAU team.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as I follow sports and as my wife kids, I watch too much sports, I play too much sports, and I take care of sports, so I'm kind of, you know, that's my thing. I think that you find that they'll even say, these recruiters say, that most of their findings for kids at the next level are happening at these AAU leagues, not so much high school anymore. And again, I'm not saying that's not a good thing, but what I'm saying is that we have to watch this overtraining and the way we're doing that.
So what can an athlete do to make sure to work different muscle groups? Because you're never going to convince kids. They all think they're going to be D1. They all think they're going to be pro. You can show them the percentages. It's a tenth of a percent or something, right? Pro, and maybe 1% go to D1 college. But so if they are going to specialize in one sport, how can they train to work all the muscle groups and avoid these one sport injuries?
Well, I think an example would be baseball, the throwing aspect of it, especially a young pitcher, and you can ruin an arm by the time a kid's 13 years old because of the way it grew and the effect on the growth plates and things like that. So I think the key thing there is at a younger age that if you're doing baseball, that the athlete is playing different positions. And secondarily, there has to be rest periods. There has to be put the ball away, put the bat away, put the glove away, and walk away from it for several months for that downtime. You can do, you know, other kind of things, but you also have to do a lot of stretching and a lot of warm-up and a lot of cool-down. And that's missing a lot in even any level of athletics because of the limited time that coaches have to spend with the athletes. They want to get right to the actual practicing the sport as opposed to the conditioning. When the kids get to the college level, there's conditioning coaches, there's times allotted for those things away from the head coaches. But at the young group, it's like you show up at 4 o'clock after school and boom, the practice has to start. Where's really the warm up and where's the cool down? It's not happening.
Football and head injuries. I love football. I broadcast it. You love football. You're the team doctor at Hobart and several other colleges. Are we kidding ourselves in terms of ever having safe tackle football?
Boy, I don't know if I want to answer that one. I think that we are continuing to explore ways to help decrease the injuries. I would say I agree with you. We're not kidding ourselves that we can improve things and we can decrease the effects, but can we eliminate head injuries in football? I would clearly say the answer is no.
But we, as you said, you can minimize the risk. I'm kind of putting you on the spot with some of this stuff. What's the earliest age where someone ought to play full contact tackle football?
Well, that's a debatable question also. I think that the one thing about watching little people play football, you know, the little midget leagues and the things like that and the Bantam and whatever it's called these days, they are still little and they don't generate as much inertia and as much of a collision. So even 2 8-year-olds hitting each other, the amount of force is way decreased. The distance that they fall to the turf is decreased, you know. So I think that, you know, you can start in those leagues at the younger age. The key factor is educating the coaches and the parents. It's education, education, education. I don't think that people should be afraid of football, but I think they have to be educated about it. And the awareness now, even for the way I look at somebody on the sidelines now at like a Hobart game compared to what I did even 5, 10 years ago, completely different. The moment there's any suspicion or I see some kind of contact, that student athlete, scholar athlete at Hobart is taken out.
And that discretion used to, a decade ago or a couple decades ago, that was the coach's discretion, and we've progressed to that point, at least at the college level, where that's no longer the case. That's your call, and if you say, coach, he's done, he's done.
Yes, myself and the athletic trainers, that's what we're observing. The moment we say they're done, and you can see a difference in coaches in the training now because nobody questions anything anymore. They don't say, oh, come on, I need that guy. Where they just say, thank you, and they move on and next man up. So.
And one of the things I'm seeing, you to go back to youth football for a minute, is I am seeing that teaching of the head-up tackling technique and that type of thing. And also, we've seen this now from the NFL level, looking at things like the kickoff. I know in the lower level of youth football, they've done away with the kickoff because that's where there's a big risk. You got the two lines running at each other at full speed. So people are at least trying to work to make these games as safe as possible for the young kids.
Yeah, I believe that the stats show that those kickoffs and returns and things like that are where the highest collisions go because it's a full run to somebody almost stationary, and I think eliminating those, especially at the youth level, is very important.
I ask this every time when I have somebody in your field, and that is ACL injuries in women athletes. Are we learning more about why they're so prone to that and what you can do about it?
Again, that's one of those things where the science continues to grow on that, but I think we realize that it isn't any one factor. It certainly is a multifactorial a statistic as women competitive athletes are tearing their ACLs much at a higher rate than men. I do a lot of ACL reconstructions, as you know, and I would say the statistics fall right into the national statistics. I probably do 3-1, almost 4-1 female athletes to male athletes.
So you've got a brand new first year class coming in at the colleges that you deal with. Do you meet with those athletes and try to get kind of a baseline of where they are in their conditioning and their past injury history and that kind of thing to help you moving forward?
Yeah, I don't myself do that, but the athletic training staff at the colleges, whether it's Hobart William Smith or Cuca College that I deal with, they do a lot of pre-screening things, and there's a lot of things that are laid down and figured out, and anybody who comes in as a new athlete that has any suspicion of an old injury, they are immediately referred to myself and my team for an evaluation so that we can clear them to go start to participate in their sport.
All right, Dr. James Mark, always good to see you. Thanks for coming in. I love talking sports and sports medicine. I appreciate the visit.
And naval aviation this time.
I didn't even know.
There you go.
How do we get that many conversations?
Always my pleasure, Ted. I appreciate you having me. Thanks.
All right, thanks very much. Kimberly, thank you as always. Appreciate you stopping by.
Thanks, Ted. It was nice to see you.
Whoops, sorry there. Say that again. I turned your mic off. Oh,
thanks, Ted. It was nice to see you.
All right, thanks for coming in. We get healthy with Finger Lakes Health every 2 weeks. It's 8:52 now on the Finger Lakes Morning News.